G'day everybody, my name's Glenn Hill.
And I'm Jacob Meyer.
Welcome to the Tactical Tennis Podcast, and Jake, today I'd really like to talk about serving.
I love serving and serving strategy and all things serving.
Yeah, so serving strategy is the thing that I'd really like to zero in on, because it's something that I've noticed that players at every level of the game seem to lack. A lot of people are maybe thinking about the serve that's directly in front of them, and they are very engaged in the process of picking the right serve for that one point. But very, very few players are really planning out service games and thinking about their overarching serving strategy over the course of an entire set.
There's a way in which I think it's hard for people to think about serving across a set or a match at all. It's almost hard for people to even make sense of that, right? Like, if you ask yourself right now, what's my serving strategy? I mean, do you really think in terms of, I mean, you're going to hit what, like 100 serves? To think of those all as a cohesive unit, as opposed to, do you think, okay, well, I'm going to hit like this one serve and this one serve?
Well, I certainly do. And when I'm playing doubles, I think about my partner serve in those terms as well. Like, I'm, you know, if I'm calling signals for my partner, like, I'm constantly thinking about, you know, the five serves that they hit before that and the five serves they're going to hit next and setting things up. And that's really the thing that I think is lacking from people, is that the reality of tennis is not every point has equal value. And when we think about serving strategy, it becomes important, because I can hit a very different serve at 40 love on my serve. Winning that point actually has less value than winning a point at 30-40, right? And so if I'm employing genuine strategy in terms of my serve location and speed and spin, and I am being intentful with this, what I can do is set things up and plan such that when I have a point that I absolutely need to win on my serve, I have a serve that I can hit that is significantly more likely to have the outcome of me winning that point than my other options. And that's really, I think, the missing piece of the puzzle for most people, because they're always thinking about the point that's right in front of them. And I think the more sophisticated players that I run into, they might have this idea of, well, it's 40 love, I'm going to hit this one serve I wouldn't normally hit because it's 40 love. But they're not really planning out really much more than that. And there is the opportunity to do so. I mean, there's avenues with which we can actually employ bigger picture strategies and set things up so that on those very big points, it's not a 50-50 chart of, well, you know, I'm going to hit this serve or this serve. I know which serve I'm going to hit because I've been setting it up for the last 5 minutes, you know, or sometimes I've been setting it up for the last 30 minutes. And that's the piece of the puzzle that is missing. And that's really the big thing that I want to talk about today, is this idea of having an overarching strategy, like something that you are tracking and keeping a very good idea on where you've been serving and how the player's been reacting. And then also some ideas on how we can practice serving when we're, you know, on the practice court, to give us the tools with which to have a more sophisticated serving strategy.
So this seems like it's necessary literally across all levels of the game. I mean, if you're just starting out in tennis, then the vast majority of the time, it's going to go without saying that you're not in a place where you're just serving people off the court. So it seems like a no-brainer. Hey, I should have a strategy to set myself up so at the very least, I can game by game strategize my service games and find intelligent ways to hold those service games. At the highest level of the sport, on the other end of the spectrum, the pros don't think of strategy when it comes to their serve in those terms. They mostly just think of well, I have a good serve. Or some of the guys that don't have great serves think, you know, I don't have such a good serve, so it's going to be a battle. I'm going to have to grind. You know, I might get broken, and I'm going to have to compensate in other places in my game. The thing that stands out to me about how you're talking about it right now is it's completely different how the tour players think, in the sense that tour players tend to think in terms of one isolated serve and in terms of hitting a great shot. As in, like, well, I'm going to hit that serve that maybe I only hit 20% of the time. And so that's a good serve because I get a free point, you know, or I get a floater or whatever it is. And the way you're talking about it seem like you're not talking about like hitting great serves, mm-hmm. executing, you know, the very best shot that you can possibly execute. The way that you're talking about it, it starts to sound like, well, hey, maybe I don't have to execute, you know, something that is kind of low percentage for me.
Right. Well, so, you know, we've been talking in the last few podcasts before this about patterns and the impact that patterns have on general point play. And the truth is that there's a degree to where we can almost think about serving strategy as a different type of pattern. I think one of the big problems is that players tend to step up to the line and they want to hit an ace. And the reality is if I'm trying to hit an ace, then I'm setting myself up for disappointment in a lot of ways. Because, you know, if you are stepping up to the serve and let's just assume that you've progressed past the point of being happy to get the serve in and you have some directional control. If you step up to the line and your thought is, well, I want to hit an ace, how often is that actually the outcome? Even if you actually hit the serve that you wanted to hit, how often is that ball just still coming back in play? The truth is you might only be hitting an ace. I mean, the very best servers in the world, when you're talking about your, you know, Milos Raonic's and your Roger Federer's and those guys, yeah, they're only hitting aces on, you know, 20% of their serves, 20-25% of their serves on good days. And you've got to think, like, do you think Milos Raonic isn't stepping up trying to hit an ace on virtually every serve he hits? Of course he is. I mean, he's serving at 135 miles an hour at corners. He's trying to hit aces, but he's still only hitting aces about 20% of the time, maybe. And then, obviously, there's a certain number of those serves that just don't come back. But then there's a lot, obviously, that still do. And so if your primary goal is to hit an ace, then I would say that, realistically, you're not thinking in the right terms, because the truth is when I go out and serve and I try to hit an ace, assuming I make the serve that I'm trying to hit, which, you know, I mean, if you're serving well, it's probably going to be somewhere in the 60% first serve range, I'm going to hit an ace most of the time that I try to hit an ace. But most of the rest of the time that I'm serving to either try to get a specific type of ball back, or I'm serving to set up an ace later in the game when I think I might actually really need it. And so this is really where I would like people to hopefully be at by the time they finish listening to this podcast today, is starting to think about serving in those terms. And maybe we can draw a couple quick sports analogies or compare this idea to a couple of other sports where I think there's a lot of overlap. And the first one is pitching in baseball, because the good pitchers in baseball are strategizing throughout the game, and they're always thinking about the five pitches they've thrown before, and they're thinking about the five pitches they're going to throw next. They're not just, what's the one pitch I want to throw right now? There's always a bigger picture in mind. And then the other one would be bowling in cricket, which I think has a similar kind of mindset, whereas, you know, a good bowler in cricket's not just going to go out there and hit the same spot over and over and over again and just bowl as fast as they possibly can. They're bowling to try to get an out. And so they're bowling to try to get somebody to hit the wrong type of shot, you know, and that you just don't get to do that by trying to, quote unquote, do your best ball every single time. There's strategy involved in this. So that's hopefully the goal for today, is people come out of this with an idea of how to think about serving a little bit differently.
So before you start talking about how you actually build a serving strategy for yourself or for somebody that you're working with, I just want to say that I've asked about a dozen tour pros this question, like just straight up, just me and them, nobody else around, you know, good conversation. Like, hey, man, what's your serving strategy? Like, how do you go about this? And to a T, they all respond the same way. Basically with a puzzled look, like, what do you mean? Right? So you reiterate, well, what's your serving? Like, what's your strategy for serving? Well, I have a good serve. It's like, yeah, you have a good serve. That's why I'm asking you. What's your strategy for serving? Yeah, I have a good serve. And that's, it's like, that's it. That's the strategy. Like, I have a good serve.
Right.
You know, oh, I hit the corners. It's like, well, okay, yeah. I mean, I know you're trying to hit the corners as hard as you can, but like, what's the strategy? And there's really like, that's the end of it. It's not that there. There's this utter dominance of thinking on just having the best stuff, right? On just pure execution of like, well, I'm just trying to blow the ball by people.
Hmm.
And in a very real way, it doesn't work. There are so many guys that can serve 130 miles an hour. So many guys. Like, almost everyone on the tour can right now. Okay? There are not that many guys that are hitting 20 aces every match. I mean, you're talking about Isner, Karlovic. Ranić isn't even doing it anymore. It's a very, very small group of people that can drop big numbers like that. I mean, Kyrgios can do it, but if you look at his numbers, he's not hitting 20 every match. And so there's this big disparity between the common thinking process and then what the actual behavior is and what's actually going on out there. So obviously, like, we have to think about things differently. We can't just think, oh, well, I'm going for, you know, the biggest possible serve I can hit on the smallest possible target where the guy just can't reach it, and I'm only going to hit it 10% of the time. Those numbers don't work out well. Some people think like that, but we know that that's not the right way to go about it. So how do we start? Like, how do we just start that process of really being intelligent, using what we have as a server to build a strategy that works for us?
Sure. That's a great question. So the first thing that I would say here is, you know, we've talked some in recent articles and in recent podcasts about this idea of creating two viable attacking strategies in a point. You know, so if I have a forehand that I can hit an attacking forehand on, but there's really only one place in the court I can take it, I'm not likely to hit a winner there. Whereas if I get a, you know, mid-court forehand that I can go in either direction, well, now my probability of hitting a winner goes up dramatically. You know, when we think about serving, here's the thing. If I hit an absolute beautiful serve on the line, but my opponent knew it was probably going there and he or she was leaning that way ahead of time, even though I hit this beautiful serve, it's probably coming back if I'm playing somebody who's at my level. So that's the starting point. So if I understand that, and then we say, well, what if there's a 50-50 chance of them guessing right? Well, now there's probably a 50% chance that they're going to make that return.
Yeah, but it's not coming back if I really hit it good, right?
Well, probably not if I hit it beautifully, but how often are we going to hit our serve perfectly? You know, and if somebody's literally 50-50 guessing and they actually guess and they lean and they guess right, then it's probably coming back unless I just hit, you know, a 1 out of 100 serve or a 1 out of 50 serve.
Yeah, and a 1 out of 100 serve or 1 out of 50 serve really doesn't do anything to advance our strategy, because it's like, okay, that's the one serve you're going to hit for the day.
Yeah, you can't plan around that. And so really what I'm trying to do is set up a situation where my opponent thinks I'm going to serve to one location, but I'm actually serving to the other. And if I accomplish that goal, then I'm almost guaranteed to win that point, because either the serve's not going to come back, or it's going to come back at such a low quality that I should be able to finish on the next ball. And that's what serving strategy really is about, is I'm trying to create situations where my opponent thinks something is going to happen that isn't going to happen.
It's funny that you say it like that, because that makes me think of walking around these pro tournaments and watching the guys practice and watching the guys warm up in particular for matches. So when they do their warm-ups, they have a match later in the day, they're usually only hitting for like 30 minutes, and they always do about 10 minutes of serving and returning where both guys serve and both guys return. And one of the things that stands out is they will tell each other where they're going to serve. So like, hey, I'm going to hit these out wide. I'm going to hit these down the tee. And two things stand out. One, they can hit an absolute bomb like 130-something miles an hour on the tee. But if they've told the guy it's going on the tee, it's coming back, like every time.
Right.
Guys that aren't, that we don't even think of as being like elite returners. I'm not talking like, oh, Djokovic gets it back or Rafa gets it back or Murray gets it back. I'm talking the guy that's 226 in the world. Sorry, I don't know who that is this week. But, you know, that guy's getting it back. And all the guys ahead of him are getting it back. And 100 guys behind him in the rankings are getting it back as well. The other thing that stands out is every now and then you'll see someone who's like, hey, man, I'm hitting these up the tee. And then for whatever reason, the server accidentally doesn't hit it up the tee. And he could hit it like not even out wide, but just to the other side of the box. And it's like a clean ace.
It's gone.
It's gone. Yeah. You know, the guy's like falling over and he's like, hey, man, I thought, you know, and they'll joke about it. They're like, I thought you were going up the tee. Because it's like now it's impossible for me to get.
Yeah, if you know, once serves start getting up in that 115, 120 mile an hour range, you know, if you're not leaning a little bit, it gets very hard to get them back. And then if you lean the wrong way, then you're pretty much toast. And so this is an example of why serving strategy can be so important, because if you don't have a strategy, you're going to have a very tough time forcing somebody to guess the wrong way. And it's going to become very, very difficult because what you're literally relying on them guessing the wrong way at that point. And so this is one of the reasons why when you practice serving, it's very important to practice your ball toss being in, you know, in the same location for different spots in the box, is so that you have that level of disguise. If you don't have that level of disguise, that level of control, then, you know, it becomes also more difficult to execute this idea of getting them not to guess, because if they can tell where you're going to serve by where you've tossed the ball, then you've got an issue. And it's surprising to me, you know, I've worked with some good juniors lately, and one of whom had a, you know, a wide serve toss and a tee serve toss. And it's like, mate, like anybody who's paying attention knows exactly where you're going to serve every time.
And that's interesting because there are still guys on the tour that still do that. And there are still guys on the tour that do not read that well, that can't read the serve, that when you tell them, hey, man, like, look at his motion, look at his toss. He's got three different service motions and three different tosses, and he's telegraphing to you before he hits the ball where he's trying to hit it. And and they're like, oh, wow, you know, like, how did you see that? Like, now you're in a completely different, like, stratosphere in their mind. But mostly those guys are going to be really tall, okay? The servers, because mostly they can kind of get away with it, because like if you're Isner and you have a different ball toss, well, you know, the quality of the ball that you're putting in is going to be a little bit different than if you're, you know, 5'10". You almost never see the smaller guys get away with that. They almost to a T have to have the same ball toss. And
well, I mean, for them to have good, like, yeah, for them to have an effective serve at their height, they have to have good disguise. Yeah, for sure. For sure. No doubt about that. So let's start to put this in some concrete terms then about how we might start to build a strategy from the beginning of a match. And so I'm going to talk for a moment as though I'm serving to a player who has a strong forehand and a slightly weaker backhand, or maybe a much weaker backhand depending. And of course, most people's thought is, well, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to serve for the backhand. But what I'm going to do at the very beginning of that match is I'm going to serve at the guy's forehand. I'm going to serve at his strength on the first point of the match, and probably the second point too. And the reason I'm going to do that is, one, you know, it's the first point of the match. He doesn't have a good rhythm returning my serve yet. It's still early. You know, he hasn't seen it very much. You know, he's seen a few in warm-ups, but he's probably only actually tried to return a couple of those. And so the odds of him really being in rhythm and making good contact on that first return of the match is relatively low. And so I want to go to strength right away, first point of the match, because it's both going to send a message to him of, I will attack your strength. You have to respect this possibility. And then also, I'm very lucky to get an error. And in doing so, you know, I've just attacked the guy's strength and forced an error out of him. That's going to be in the back of his head. And if I can do this throughout the match periodically and be smart about it and get errors out of that strength, it can make him start to second-guess that shot, especially on that return. And so now I've opened up this possibility to this guy in his head of the serve can and will come to my forehand even though it's my best shot. So that creates doubt. It creates space, because in just creating doubt, I now have slowed his reaction time down a smidgen, because he can't anticipate as well as he might normally do. And that opens up more possibilities for me to get at his backhand on the serve when I want to.
Hmm. I had a coach recently who, interestingly enough, was actually a pitcher when he was young and picked up tennis a little bit later on. You know, I'm by later on, I mean, you know, he wasn't a prodigy tennis player when he was 8 years old, you know.
Right.
But he was a pitcher, and he was a good, solid pitcher. And he probably was at that level where he had to use strategy more than just being able to, you know, throw fastballs all the time, right?
Right.
And the way that he talked about it, I really liked. He said that your goal when you're serving is to get them to mishit the return.
Mm-hmm.
Just to mishit it. He's like, you know, like if you're pitching, your goal is to get the guy to hit a ground ball into the infield, where some, you know, somebody can pick it up and throw him out at first base.
Right. Or maybe his friend out is running to second too.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's not to strike him out. And it's a really interesting concept. It comes from, you know, you don't need to throw your arm out. You don't want to hurt yourself. Like you want to get this in a sustainable way. And in baseball, it's interesting because you can actually progress through the game faster. You can get batters out more quickly by getting them to make bad contact than you can by striking them out.
Yeah, because if I get him to make bad contact on the first pitch when he steps up, I throw one pitch and he's out. Whereas if I'm going to strike him out, I have to throw four pitches to get him out.
Well, three.
Three. Sorry, balls, yeah. I'm Australian and baseball is a big
game. That's awesome.
It took me a second, yeah. Three pitches to get him out.
He does know baseball actually pretty well, folks. But
And I think that's exactly right. I think that's a much better way of thinking about serving than trying to hit aces, is trying to get the guy to mishit or the girl to mishit. I think that's a much more sophisticated and intelligent way to think about serving in matches. And like I was saying earlier, like when I go to hit an ace, I've set it up first, because I've, off that same toss, in that same situation, I've hit two other serves that don't look anything like the one I'm about to hit. And he hasn't seen this serve in the last, you know, 15 minutes maybe. And now I'm going to pull it out because I know that he's going to be leaning the wrong way. And that's...
Okay, so...
That's the power of strategy.
He's leaning the wrong way. When you say, when I go for that ace, are you going for, like, hey, I'm going to hit this one 10, 15 miles an hour harder. I'm going to put this one on the line, and I haven't been putting the others on the line.
Well, maybe. It might go on the line. But the bigger idea is I expect it to be an ace because I expect my opponent to be leaning the wrong way. I expect them to be anticipating a serve that's not coming. You know, bringing it back to your thing earlier, essentially what I've done is through a series of serves, I've kind of told him I'm going to serve T, but I'm actually going wide.
Okay, so it's not that you're going to hit a serve that's exceptional in your level of execution.
Well, of course it's going to be exceptional in its level of execution.
But I mean relative to all your other serves. So it sounds right, like you're saying like you're going to hit an ace with a serve that is essentially the same as all the other serves that you've been using.
Yeah, essentially. I'm not expecting like, oh, I'm going to serve an ace here because it's 20 miles an hour harder. It's purely because I've got them expecting something else. And that's what it all comes down to. And so, you know, I might spend, So just let me walk through a couple of service games here. You know, I might come out at the start of a match and I might serve first couple of serves straight at my opponent's strength. So I'm going to go wide on the tee, and then I'm wide on the deuce, and then up the tee on the ad court. Then my next serve, I'm going to go backhand body with slice on the deuce court, because off the frame, that's going to look like the wide serve for just a moment because I'm making the same kind of contact, right? But I'm going to actually jam in the body. My expectation is that serve is going to come back, but because I'm jamming the backhand body, my expectation is it's going to come back as more of a bunted ball with less pace, and I'm going to get a forehand off it, right? Then my next serve of the day, I'm probably going to go flat power straight at the body, okay? And so now I'm four serves in, and I haven't served actually at this guy's weakness once yet, okay? Not a single time. And I don't expect that I'm going to have won the first 4 points, and now probably I'll go at the backhand and to get out of that game, because I would hope at that point I'm probably up 40-15. So now I'm going to go, you know, up the tee on the deuce court at 40-15, and he hasn't actually seen a backhand return yet, like a real one, and now all of a sudden he gets it, and hopefully I get out of the game on that, right?
Okay, so let me back you up just a little bit here. I want to dig deeper into this because I like the way this sounds. Let's just go back one point where you said you're going to go flat at the body,
mm-hmm.
right? So is that flat at the body, like, is that like going at his hip, jamming him? Is that just going right into his forehand?
On the ad court, that's going to be on his right hip. So I'm going to be going at his forehand side, jamming him on the forehand side with pace. And that's kind of important because, you know, I'm going to expect most players are much better at moving to their, most right-handed players are much better at shifting to their left and hitting a forehand, you know, a little bit inside out than they are moving to their right and hitting a backhand. Just because people hit run around forehands all the time, so that movement pattern is ingrained. They're faster with it. They're better executors. So I'm going to, and you know, on the deuce court, I'm going to slide it into the backhand hip with spin, right? Because I want to take advantage of that poorer movement to the right. Mm-hmm. But on the ad court, I want to take it at that spot with more pace on this forehand hip. So I take away the time for him to make that movement pattern work.
So they have less time and they're more likely to hit. Basically mishit a forehand.
Yes. Yeah, much more likely to miss, because they're not actually going to really have time to get out of the way of it with the slider. They're going to have time to probably get a half step and create a little bit of space. But that's why I hit the slider, because it starts out on that line, and then I expect they're moving a little bit to their right, that half step, and the slide's going to keep it's going to chase after them. So they're moving away, and that ball's going to keep chasing after them. But as a righty on the ad court, you know, to slide it into the guy, the angles don't work out as well. You know, I'm going to hit a slice serve. If I hit that slice serve, I have to aim wider out onto his backhand side. And I just, the angles don't work out as well. It's not coming at him to begin with. And so when I hit that slice, it just, the effect of the slice isn't as powerful. So I'm just going to go with a straighter serve at the forehand hip instead and use the power to take away the time for them to get the movement in they need to really make the space to hit the forehand properly.
Okay, let's do another game.
Okay, so now the second game I'm coming out, I'm remembering all the serves that I hit the first time around, okay? I'm always keeping a good sense. Now, look, if you ask me 5 games down the road what I did in the first game, I might not remember anymore.
Right.
But I will have a very good sense of what's happened the 2 or 3 service games previously, right? So this next game, I'm going to come back out, and I'm going straight back into that the backhand hip slider. Right? Why? Because the last serve I hit was the T-serve into the backhand, which is the one he's probably been expecting the whole time, but he's still only seen once. And so my backhand slider, this time I'm going to start maybe a little bit more into the backhand itself, not less into the body,
mm-hmm.
and put a little more spin on it and draw it more, okay, so that it looks more like that T-serve that he wants or expects. Maybe he doesn't necessarily want it, but he's certainly expecting it, but it's going to tail into the body. And so the goal here is to get him to actually step a little bit to his left, and then the ball's going to tail in and jam him anyway. Okay?
Right, so he's thinking, that's his weaker return, so he's probably protecting it a little bit.
Yeah, he's anticipating, because people probably have been attacking that thing for 10 years
right.
on the serve. And so, you know, he's expecting, his return has adapted to that. And so I'm giving him a serve that looks like a T-serve where I've actually missed my spot a little bit. It'll look like a, you know, like a T-serve where I miss a little bit to my left, so it's actually kind of into the meat of the backhand.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just looks like that thing that people think they want.
But with enough slice that it's moving.
With the slice, it's then going to move. So he's going to plant, and then all of a sudden it's actually a jammed back end instead. And again, I'm not expecting that to be an ace, right? The only serve I've actually hit this so far that I would have actually expected to be an ace would be the very first serve of the match, which was the wide serve on the deuce court. That one I would think I have a very good chance of opening with an ace. Although I don't actually really expect it to be, because the first serve of a match, people tend to be more 50-50. They don't really have as much bias.
Yep.
But I do expect that serve's not going to come back. And so, you know, so I'm going to start off with this body serve. You know, I expect I'm going to get a forehand for my first shot, which is a big part of my serving strategy when I'm playing singles, is I'm serving to get forehands. Because if I hit a forehand as my first ball of the rally, my odds of winning the point go up dramatically.
Yeah, so let's say that again. You're serving to get forehands.
Yes, I'm serving so I can hit an offensive forehand as my first ball of the rally. That's my primary goal when I'm serving on the majority of my serves. Because again, if I hit a forehand first, I'm far more likely to win the point than if I hit a backhand first, because my forehand is better than my backhand. So that's just the reality that I live in. And so I have to work. My serving strategy takes that into account.
Yeah, and that's the reality that the vast majority of us live in. If you got nothing else out of listening to this today and just took that I'm serving so that I can get a forehand on the next ball, you're going to be a better server. That's a better strategy than what most people use.
Yeah, and that one's a little more common at the higher levels of the game with the more astute players. Some of the players aren't really serving or thinking about serving that way, but some of them are. So now we go to the ad court, and you know, what's the one serve the guy hasn't seen yet? He's seen T on the deuce court, he's seen body on the deuce court, he's seen Y on the deuce court, he's seen T on the ad court, he's seen body on the ad court. He hasn't seen the wide serve in the ad court yet. So now I'm going to hit that serve because I'm hoping I'm going to, you know, pull that off and I'm going to be up 30 love. And I've got a little bit of breathing room. All right, so I'm going to go wide on the ad court.
And that's going to be probably later, his weakest return.
That's probably, I'm hopefully going at what is his weakest return. Later in the match, not this service game, but one or two service games later, I would actually hit that as a kicker, to give him a different pace and stretch him more. And that like if I hit that as a kicker, I'm actually also setting up a different serve, because if I go and I hit a kicker wide on somebody's backhand for a couple first serves, and it's their weaker shot and I really pull them wide, what I can then do the next time that comes up is I can throw up that same kicker toss but take it up the tee, and they've probably stepped wide looking for the backhand, and now I just hit an ace.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's this idea of where we can start to be setting things up. And that's one of the big things that I'm always trying to do when I'm serving, or when I'm calling serves for my partner in doubles, is I'm trying to set things up for the future. You know, if I'm up 40 love, I might hit a throwaway serve that I think there's a 50-50 chance I'm going to lose the point, because at 40-15, I'm still getting out of that service game in all probability. Right.
Right.
But what I can do is I can hit a serve that will set me up for the next game. So maybe when I'm down 30-40 in the next game, I can do something that I set up previously that gives me a much better chance of winning the point.
So what's an example of that? Like, where might you throw in a serve where you go, hey, I'm 40 love, I want to play strategically here. I don't want to use up one of my serves where I just go at this guy's weakness and show him my best stuff, right?
Right. Sure. So an example of this might be, or maybe what's happened here is I've hit a couple of the wide kickers on the ad court, right? And then I've taken one ace up the tee off that same toss. So what I might do at 40 love now is I might actually throw up the kicker toss but hit a forehand body kicker, okay? Now, if he gets onto this, I'm probably losing the point. I'm hoping maybe that he doesn't, but I'm probably losing the point. If he gets onto it, if he reads it, you know, he sets his feet well, I don't get enough movement on the ball, whatever, mm-hmm. there's a very good chance that he's just going to crush that thing,
mm-hmm.
right? But I'm willing to take that chance because I'm up 40 love. And what that does is, you know, we talk about two viable attacking options. Well, that throws in a third one. That gives him something else to be thinking about. So when next time I come around to that ad court, you know, if I throw up that toss, which, you know, for me, my kicker toss is it's only got a very small variation compared to my normal first serve toss. But if I throw up that kicker toss now, in the back of his head, the most recent time I hit that toss, I came at his body on it, right? And so if I really want to stretch him, let's say that might be a time when I would hit the wide kicker and serve volley, because I haven't shown him that in a while, and maybe I haven't served volleyed on that before. And for me, that's a great play. I mean, you know, hitting a wide kicker to the ad court and serving volleying, you know, that paid 50% of my undergraduate degree.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, and serving volleying paid for the whole undergraduate degree. True. But that specific play was obviously one that I've done a lot of. And I don't serve volley a ton in singles anymore. I still do some, but it's not like I won't serve volley 100% of points like I did once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I feel very confident that if I hit the serve that I want and it's somebody's weaker shot and they're not sitting on it, that I'm going to win that point.
Right.
And so that would be me setting that up. So I've hit the body kicker, and then the next time around, I'm going to go for the wide kicker and serve volley behind it, and I'm probably just putting an easy forehand volley into an open court at that point. Right. The vast majority of the time when I make that play. But the thing is, I'm not going to come out and hit that kicker and serve volley behind it unless I've set it up first.
Right. You don't just say, oh, I'm just going to hit kickers and serve volley behind them all.
No, I don't. And so this is really where I think people hopefully want to be. And look, I don't, obviously, for people listening, some of you are going to have a very well-developed service motion. You're going to have access to a lot of different spins and speeds and locations. And some of you might have less. But the important thing to understand is this is stuff that scales. You don't, if your opponent is at your level and your level is not where you can hit, you know, like a wide kicker and then also a topspin slice up the tee off the same toss, that's okay, because the reality is your opponent probably can't handle on the return side of things as much either. So yeah, everything tends to scale.
It doesn't have to be executed to the same level that the pros are doing it in order for it to be successful for our league matches.
Yeah, no, not at all. And so that's a key thing. And another thought that, you know, if you're struggling with the idea of being able to plan all this stuff out, I will just maybe in closing offer a thought and a little anecdote that maybe people might find useful. Because if you can't manage a strategy where you're thinking through all these serves and keeping track of where you're serving, that's okay. That's perfectly understandable, right? But the next best thing that you can do is be completely random. And I'm not kidding, yeah. Right? We can be completely random. But the reality is, study after study has shown that human beings are actually very poor at being random.
It's very hard.
We do a terrible job of it. So I'm going to bring back to baseball pitching. And there was a certain famous pitcher whose name I can't recall off the top of my head. But I do remember that this pitcher would take cues from things in the stand or inside the stadium to decide what pitch he was going to throw next. So maybe he would look at the clock and, you know, that was up. And if, you know, look at the second hand of the clock. And if the second hand fell on a 3, then he's throwing a slider to the top right corner. And if the second hand fell on a 6, then he's going to throw a fastball. And if the second hand was on an 8, you know, basically he picked something that was completely out of his control, that changed constantly, and had a way of interpreting that thing as being the pitch that he was going to throw. And so then it's genuinely a truly random event.
Right.
And if the reality is, if you aren't choosing what pitch you're going to throw next or what serve you're going to hit next, well, then it's very unlikely that your opponent knows what's coming. Because, you know, in reality, you almost don't know what's coming, right?
Yes.
And so this is a little bit harder to do in tennis terms in some ways, just because you don't, most of you probably aren't playing with a shot clock, but you might have a watch on. If you have a watch on, you can just look at the time and look at, you know, what the seconds on your watch are saying to pick whether you're going to go tees, you know, body or wide. But, you know, this is just something that you can employ as a simple way of keeping your opponent on their toes and keeping you from falling into rut. Because the one thing that I will say is, players adapt, people adapt. And one thing that drives me nuts when I'm playing doubles and, you know, I've been working patterns and I'm trying to set things up, and I get in, my partner gets locked into a certain serve and combination.
Right.
And so an example, I had a match a couple of years ago where I was playing with a guy and, you know, the opponent had a slightly weaker backhand return. And so early on in the match, we had success with this wide kicker and a cross. So he would kick the ball wide, we'd call the cross, and that was working quite well.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was, my partner wanted to do that every single ad point. And so I'd try to call something different to keep the opponent on his toes, and he'd call me off it. And we just kept doing the same play over and over again. And so, of course, inevitably, the opponent got practice hitting the return, got used to seeing that particular pattern of movement. And before you know it, you know, we're losing points on that. And it went from being what was an 80% play at the start of the match to being a 40 or 50% play by the middle of the match. But the problem is you can't have a 40 to 50% play on your own serve and win matches doing it.
Right.
And whereas if we'd managed it well and used it appropriately, it would have stayed an 80% play. But instead of being this thing that we went to when we needed to win a point, it became the thing that we did constantly. And so we went from winning the service games early, easily early in the match, to service games becoming an absolute battle because we couldn't close out on the ad court. And that's just one of the problems that sometimes we find something that works and we just lock in on it. And the problem is you need to make sure that you keep enough variety in that the thing that's working now keeps working as the match progresses.
Yeah, that's one of the places where there's actually a lot of precision to this because, I mean, the strategy that we've discussed today is not, like, so sophisticated that it's hard to follow. Like, let's be real, right? This is pretty straightforward, I think, for both of us and for most of the people that are listening.
Mm-hmm.
But to make the judgment accurately and consistently accurate when you're playing someone to decide, hey, I could hit 100 kickers out to this backhand and he's going to miss them all. He's never going to be good enough to adjust. Versus I can use this maybe 10 or 12 times before he adapts and he's going to be good enough actually to hurt me with it. Right?
Right.
You have to be able to make that judgment consistently well. And, you know, we hear coaches talk about both sides of that. Like, oh, use variety all the time. And then people often will overuse variety and they use variety for no other reason except for to use it, which also isn't a strategy, or at least it's not a coherent, sophisticated strategy. And then the other side of that is people will do what your partner did and just lock in and say, well, it worked early. You know, it should work forever. I shouldn't have to make any adjustments to it. And neither one of those oversimplified approaches really are good enough when you're playing competitive tennis.
Well, you're leaving a lot on the table. You know, if that's the way you're strategizing, then there's what would be an optimal serving strategy, and then there's a large gap, and then there's what you're doing.
That sounded like a very nice way of saying you're not doing a very good job.
Right. Well, yes, perhaps so. But anyway, folks, that's probably a lot to chew on. And so if you have questions about anything that we've said today, do reach out and ask us to clarify. You know, you can email me at glenn@tacticaltennis.com.
I'm jacob@tacticaltennis.com. And you can get us.
You can tweet us.
Yes.
Tweet at us. You can't tweet us. You can't tweet us, but you can tweet
you
at
can
us.
Tweet to us, hopefully, and to us at Tactical Tennis.
and you can reach me at Glenn S. Hill. And sign up for email if you haven't on the website. And because we do have some emails going out with some unique content that you're not seeing in articles. And outside of that, folks, hit them well, and we'll see you next time.
Hit them smart. See you guys.